Just a menace, just a menace. Menace to sobriety. Just a menace, just a menace. Just a menace. Menace to sobriety. Just a menace, just a menace. Menace to sobriety. Hello and welcome to another episode of Menace to Sobriety with your host with the most, and I don't mean to boast, it's me, Dan O'Reilly, aka Dapper Laughs, aka The Geezer. I'm recording another one from my house, man. I feel a bit bad, but I've got loads I've got to talk about because I'm 39 this week on Saturday. On the 17th, is that Friday or Saturday? Let me have a quick fucking look. I don't even know. Saturday, I'm fucking 39. And I wanted to do a podcast just looking back over my life. Have a quick look at everything I've done. All of the fucking madness, right? Just where it started, where it went. I just wanted to have a little look. I wanted to have a little look at my boozing throughout. Just recap. Have a little look through and see if I can pinpoint. I want to find out while I'm talking to you if I can pinpoint the exact moment that it went a bit west for me, and maybe you guys can relate to it yourselves. But I want to have a look at where I'm at, man, because I'm a firm believer that, by the way, I'm in my office again. I'm still shooting Bermondsey Tales, fucking amazing film with Alan Ford, which is Bricktop from, the Snatch. I'm filming it with Bricktop. I've been doing scenes all this week with Bricktop. It's unbelievable, you know. Let me see if I can pick a couple of it. I don't care if you're Muhammad Ahmad Ali. You're on thin ice, my pedigree chum, and I shall be underneath it when it breaks, that one. If you stop me again while I'm walking, I'll cut your Jacobs off. That geezer. Do you know what nemesis means? That geezer. I can't do the accent. But I've been working with him. Would you take sugar? No, thank you, Turkish. I'm sweet enough. That geezer. I've got a fight and I want to use the pikey. That geezer. So I've been working with him, Alan Ford, absolutely amazing talent. And Vaz Blackwood, which is from Lockstock. Vaz Blackwood from Lockstock. If the milk turns out to be sour, I ain't the kind of pussy to drink it. That geezer, which is great. He's great fun. It's like my third film with him. But I'm having good fun, guys. And we don't ever... So I'm just shooting this in my office, all right? But wherever you're listening to this, I want to take you on a bit of a journey with me. But I feel a bit guilty because I'm not doing ones with guests, but my schedule just does not permit it. And I'm going to be up in this to be a bit more informative and comedy driven and stuff like that. And we're going to keep the guests coming. But you just have to bear with me till I get this feature film out of the way. But I'm trying my hardest. It's now quite late. I'm trying my hardest to make sure I don't miss a weekend. And we keep one going because I know some people depend on this podcast to keep them sober. I get a lot of messages about it and to just keep them entertained, and they've just come on the journey. So yes, the film is very poignant within this journey because I'm 39 this week and I feel like in life we rarely stop to look around and appreciate the position we're in. If you're anything like me and you're driven, I'm highly driven. I'm it's an obsession almost. My love for comedy, acting, writing, you know, creating and progressing in my life. I've got a massive chip on my shoulder since my TV show got cancelled and all of that jazz back in the day. And I think it stems even further back to my childhood, which we'll have a look in that I've, if you come from, if you had a traumatic childhood or you come from a dysfunctional family, you know, your parents broke up or whatever, you can sort of become needy and scared of abandonment, you know, because, have issues around sort of, you know, not being loved, maybe, even though I was, but, you know, you think because, you know, your parents have broke up and the fact, you know, I'm just guessing this stuff, but, you know, you see it in films and stuff like that. And I've read some stuff and I did do a bit of counseling. And, you know, sometimes the children can feel that it's their fault that their family falls apart or whatever. And it can make you turn you into a people pleaser, which I 110% have been my whole life, people pleasing, wanting, and it makes you want everyone to like you, and also to prove to the world, you know, in order to make people like you, yeah, and to people please, you got to make people, you know, you got to feel like you're enough, you're doing enough to please everyone, and a lot of that can go into working too hard. I think Gabor Mate, that does all the ADHD stuff, they say it's a massive trait in ADHD as well. And you know, the trauma, or, you know, having tough childhoods and stuff like that can lead you to spend the rest of your life trying to prove yourself to the world, you know, trying to prove that you're enough. And I used to think it was ambition. I think it is a mixture of ambition. It's definitely ambition and drive. But it's certainly a fear of not being enough, a fear of being left behind, a fear of the world knowing. You know, I think we all have this imposter syndrome or inferior complex where we think to ourselves, I think we all do think this, that we're not, well, maybe it's just me. I don't know. You'll have to tell me. You'll have to give me some feedback in the comments on this one. But do you do an answer in the comments? Do you feel like you shouldn't be in the place you're in? And when things go right, does it feel a bit awkward? Or do you feel like you're pretending to be someone else and that everyone's going to work out who you are? Because I always feel like that, you know, because right now in my life, I'm very blessed, very, very blessed with work, with money, with opportunities and stuff like that. But it hasn't always been like that. It's been a fucking shit show. It's been horrific, to be honest with you, at times. And it feels like this has come about, but it's a long time coming. And now that I'm nearly 40, I'm 39 this week, I just want to stop and think, well done. That's what I feel. I feel happy. I feel content. I don't feel like I've got anything else to prove. I feel like I've set the foundations and I can enjoy myself now. I'm doing a film with some amazing actors, and that has just been my dream since day one. Since I was 5 years, apparently my mum told me, and mum, if you're watching, because I know you watch these, so sorry about talking about the dysfunctional family, but you know what? That's another thing. That is another thing I will say. I will definitely say this because I know my mum listens and watches these podcasts. One thing that I do realize, you know, that a lot of people can do, a lot of people can blame their parents for, say, for instance, like my mum and dad broke up, it was a difficult divorce for my mum and my father. But I mean, it wasn't a nice situation. They broke up. And then, you know, it was difficult for our kids, you know, kids that don't see both their parents as much as they should, or, you know, have to do two Christmases and all of that stuff. It's hard. And a lot of people can grow up and become adults and go counselling and all that jazz and work out that their trauma is because of stuff that happened with the kid and blame their parents. But, you know, the way that I see it, right, and the way that I see things like this is my mum was my age, right, and my dad was my age, right, and look at the fucking mistakes I'm making in my life. Like, life comes at you hard, you know, and my mum loves me to pieces. My father loved me to pieces, God rest his soul, and they did the best they could with this, you know, and I've got such fond memories as well, but they did the best they could with the cards they were dealt, and, you know, I'm doing the same now, you know, I'm doing the same now. So a lot of people can blame their parents, and look, our parents are just human and they make mistakes as well. But the one thing that does stick in my mind is that they were the age I was now when I was a baby. Do you know what I mean? And look at me, I still don't feel like an adult, and I'm fucking 39, mate. I'm 39 this week, and I feel like I ain't worked it all out. I feel like I've spent 38 years getting it wrong. And I'm moving into my 39th year, kind of feeling like I might be getting it right now. So big shout out to my mum and my dad, if he's up there listening. I know things were tough, but I love you. And you did great with the cards that you had dealt. And look at me, man. I'm fucking funny, confident, good looking. Just seen the dog in the background. If you're watching on YouTube, that's fucking hilarious. Right, let's go back. Let's start at the childhood then. My mum and dad broke up when I was very young. I was about, I don't know, 2 or 3 or something like that. It was a tricky divorce throughout my childhood. My dad didn't take it well, to say the least. And you know, it was tricky. It was just the three of us, me, my mum, and my sister for a long time. My mum grafted, worked hard, looked after us and coped, man. And my childhood was, you know, I learned a lot about how strong women can be through my childhood. My mum, I can remember having piles of ironing, and she'd iron for the neighbors. She'd have you know, she's finding out ways to make money. She looked after the three of us and, you know, we got by and we had a lot of fun. I can remember having a lot of fun with my mum and my sister. And my dad, I used to see him at weekends, but there was long periods of time when I didn't see him or, I don't know, I can't remember. My memory's a bit choppy back then, but I used to see him every other weekend. My dad was great fun. My dad was a comedian, not professionally, but if you knew him, he was a comedian. My dad had jokes. My dad used to do a thing at the dinner table party trick where you'd say to him, give me a subject and I'll give you a joke. So we'd throw a subject at him and he'd give us a joke. And he was always entertaining people. And whenever he came out, he had little tricks and stuff like that. He used to have a fake thumb. And I never knew it. This is a funny story, actually. One time I took him out to meet my mates. He said, I want to meet your mates because I moved out from, my mum moved to, we grew up on a council estate, first of all. And I used to get in quite a lot of fights and stuff. And I used to get beaten up quite a lot, actually, to be honest with you. But I used to be up for a fight, but I used to have quite a lot of fights on this little council estate. And, I got bashed up quite a few times at a young age. And, I look back on that and I kind of think to myself, I like that because when I moved out of that, council estate into a council house, which was a bit nicer, which still a council house, but in a nicer area. And, when I mixed with other boys, I felt like I was a bit rougher and readier. And, all through my teens, all the lads were fighters. They were all scrappers fighting. Vandalism. I was a naughty boy growing up, do you know what I mean? I look back on it now and I was a fucking nutter. But, I used to see my dad every other weekend. And my mum moved away when I was probably 16, 17, something like that. I say 15, but my mum always says it was later than that. But I know I was still at school or I was just going into college. I got expelled from one school for loads of shit. That's a whole nother podcast. But then, I remember I moved out. My uncle owned a house when I was about 16 and I rented the house off him when I was 16. And my uncle charged me rent. So I had to have a job. I worked at a go-kart track, which was opposite the house. And my dad came and saw me and he said, right, you're living on your own now. I want to meet your mates because you're going to be spending all your time with your mates. So I took my dad out to meet my mates at the pub. And he was showing all these tricks, doing all these tricks to my mates, and they were all laughing. And he was cracking jokes, and I said, "Dad, how the fuck do you do that one where you pull out the fucking?" He had a bit of cloth, red cloth, and pulled it out. I said, "How'd you do that?" He showed me how to fake thumb. So I said, "You brought a fucking fake thumb out with you, with me and my mates down the fucking pub." I must have been a bit older actually, but that's what he was like. You know, he was always entertaining. So I guess that's where I get it from, but. Yeah, I worked from an early age. I started working 16, 17, 18. I got expelled from school, but I managed to get some GCSEs still. I got expelled from one school, put in another school, and kept it kind of calm. Done some fucking mad shit, though, I'm not going to lie. And from that age, from when my mum moved away, we were drinking and fucking doing drugs. I'm not going to lie to you. Do you know what I mean? It was like, before she moved away, we were drinking. And it was a done thing, man. It was like at that age, everyone couldn't wait to get drunk. I can remember being, I don't know what year it is, year seven, year eight, I don't know, 13, well, 14 or 15. And everyone at school would be talking about who can get booze. Is this normal? Tell me in the comments, is this normal? All the people in the school talking about what parties to go to at the weekend or what parks to all meet up. We always go meet up down the park, get the White Lightnings. Get a bottle of, this is what we used to do when I was 14 years old. Go down the park. It was either bottles of hooch, bottles of Bacardi Breezer, or fucking big fucking 2 liter White Lightning fucking ciders. Those things were about £3. But if you could get hold of one of them, about four of you were getting fucked. And then we'd fucking death lug the thing. Do you know what I mean? We'd get 10 sovereigns because you could get sovereigns back then. 10 sovereigns for £1.75 or something. And we'd fucking, you'd be like at twos in them. If you could get twos, you were a legend. That's how long ago I'm talking. Kids won't even know about this, mate. I'm going to take you on a nostalgic journey here just with cigarettes. When you had a cigarette, twos was half of it. Quarters was a quarter. Or you could say saves. That's save us a bit. It was saves. What was it? It was twos. Give us a quarter. It was saves. And then words, just words. That's where it adds sovereign right around the butt. All right, go on, give us words, give us words, give us words. And that was deadly if you got words, because you just get the cigarette, have one toke and a fucking cherry goes straight down your throat, mate. It'll burn, burn the ends of your fingers off. You was a proper pikey if you asked for words, but there we were, mate. I used to get into the old rolling backy. That shit would last you for days. Prison rolls, we'd call them. Like, just the tiniest bit of backy, you know, like, smoking like 70-year-old geezers when I was about fucking 14. But those were the days, mate. Yeah, and then what we'd do is we'd do death lugs. That's where you get fucking, you'd get a bottle of cider and you'd take fucking, until you got a massive cherry on the end of it like that. And then you'd fucking neck the cider while spinning in a circle. So you're full of fucking sovereign smoke, necking cider, and then you let go, blow it out, fucking wobble across the fucking park and smash into a fucking tree or something. And that was our idea of having a good time. We didn't have TikTok or fucking PlayStations back then. That was our idea of having a good time. And now I can kind of see how the old alcoholism started. But yeah, all them, but I don't think I had a problem then. I think it was just, you know, it was just what kids done, and every weekend was the same as that. And if I'm honest, that was 20 years of that. So 15, 25, 35, even longer. Cause I think I've been pissed up every weekend, more or less every weekend. I mean, maybe not every weekend. Maybe there'd be some weekends where I'd just have a few beers, but the weekend to me signaled fucking party time, you know, and it's mental when you think about that, isn't it? That every single weekend for the last 20 years, I've been getting pissed. Like, I fucking deserved it. Like just working a week or getting some work done or fucking just getting up and getting work done in the week deserves a fucking celebration, a party to get absolutely annihilated, smashed, drink 20 fucking beers and get a line of gear in you. For what? For getting up like I'd fucking cured cancer or fucking deserved the Nobel Peace Prize for just getting through a fucking week. It's mental, innit? I used to drink like it was fucking New Year's Eve every fucking Friday. That's mental, innit, when you look back on it. Now, I don't think, but anyway, yeah, let's keep going through. So when my mum moved, she moved down to Cornwall. She took the money. What happened, the reason why she moved, which was great entrepreneurialism from her. She bought her council house up here soon because she could get a big discount on it. You get a discount on council. As soon as she bought it, she done it up and flogged it, made a bit of money, which is what she always wanted to do, get on the property ladder, move to Cornwall, bought a fucking hotel, changed it into a house, try and flip it again. So yeah, very inspiring. My mum was always willing to take risks, forward thinking. I think I get a lot from that, you know what I mean? But I had various jobs. I worked at a go-kart track, I worked at Argos, I worked at Tesco's, I worked at a veterinary labs cleaning, I worked loads of little jobs. I worked at a play scheme, worked a lot. I'll work anywhere, I'll do anything, right? Then I got a job. I wanted part-time work because I was always auditioning for acting roles. And I remember I auditioned for EastEnders back then when I was in my teens. Grange Hill, you wouldn't know that. I had loads of auditions. Never got no work. My hope and dreams as an actor was shattered very early. I was very good in college doing acting. I always played the lead. We'd done musical theatre, and I always played the leads. You know, I was that guy in college. I always played the leads. There was even a short film that came in looking for talent in our, but my mum's still got the cutout. I see, whoever's editing this, remind me to get you the cutout. But yeah, I can remember they came into the college and they said, we're shooting this short film at Shepperton Studios, proper big filming studios. And they needed to audition someone for the lead role in it. They needed a young lad, and fucking hell, do you know what? It's just fucking what I've just realized it was about. It was called The Bottle, and it was about alcohol. It was about a kid that finds a bottle of wine, and the fucking camera follows the bottle of the wine, and he goes all through these different fucking these things, like loads of drama happens and everything like that. And Yeah, man, that was that, and everyone auditioned for it in the whole college, and I got the part. I got it. I auditioned. I acted and auditioned, and I got the part. And then we went and shot it. That's fucking crazy. If I can get the clip up, have a look at this. This is the clip. If it's there, that's the picture. Someone remind me to put that in this. But wow, it's about alcohol as well. That's fucking crazy. So I went and done that audition, and that really inflated my ego. You know, I always thought I was a good performer and a good. So I thought, oh bang, I'm going to come out of here and I'm going to get a part in a TV show or a stage play or something like that, and that's me set for life. But that didn't happen. I worked out very quick that wasn't going to happen. Well, unfortunately, my life had hit me pretty fast. I come out of college and I was paying rent. So, and daddy, I didn't live with daddy, and mummy was in Cornwall. And yeah, not only did I want to pay rent, I wanted beer money as well. So I got a job. My first proper job was as an estate agent. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that to you, but yeah, my first proper job come as an estate agent. And yeah, I became quite good at that. I was a little salesman. In Woking, I was selling houses and, I was doing lettings actually, I think. I was renting out properties. I was only young, fuck me. I don't know who would have fucking listened to me showing them around the flat when I was back in 19. I was all right, knobhead. But yeah, I done quite well at that. I could connect with people and talk to them. And I'd done that up to the age of 18. And I can remember when I was 18, I was focused on becoming number one. It was for Man & Co. in Woking. And I worked for Man & Co. in Woking. And Les Morales, which I do still speak to, he's been looking for properties for me over the last few years and fucking trying to sell my gas and that. Les Morales, big shout out to you. And another geezer called Stephen Walker. He was the top salesman, Stephen Walker, and Les was my boss. And I can remember I was fighting every month to try and become the best sales negotiator and rent out the most flats and all that. And that was my life, and I fucking loved it. I was earning what I thought was good money. I had a company car, best company car out of all my pals, because it was a company car. And I got to 18, and I was like, "Fuck, shit, man, this is me now. Is this me?" Is this me? I think I'd done it for 2 years. And I was like, is this me at 18 years old? I was like, is this me? Oh, fuck. I almost forgot, man. I want to be a fucking star, man. I want to act. I didn't know about comedy then, really. I mean, I'd seen some comedy. I was a massive Lee Evans fan, but I think I'd done a couple of stand-up gigs before I quit. I wanted to be an actor. The acting wasn't working. Someone said stand. No, Lee Evans. I watched the Lee Evans fucking one of his old DVDs at a house party when I was off me nut, and I carried on watching him. I got this idea in my head that I wanted to be like Lee Evans. It was Lee Evans. I was a fucking huge fan of Lee Evans. He was like my idol, right? And I can remember the way he acted out his comedy. Visually, I thought it was amazing. He drew me in. It drew you in to visualize the comedy. You know, instead of saying a joke like, "Oh, this happened, this happened, and this happened." He'd go, "I was with my wife," and then he'd become the wife and then become the, and it was that, that's what my passion is about, becoming the character. As you know, with Kid Frankie or the Sesh Gremlin and all that stuff. So before I quit the estate agent, I think I'd had a couple of stand-up comedy gigs and I was like, I want to perform in front of a live audience. I fucking loved that. But I couldn't get into London and do all the gigs, and with being an estate agent, you work late in the evening. So I started getting this, I can't remember what it was called, the Stagecoach or something like that. It was like an acting newspaper that had auditions in the back, and I saw an audition in the back for One Stop Entertainment, and it was One Stop Entertainment, and it was an audition to be essentially a red coat, you know, working at Butlins, but in Cyprus. So going and being an entertainer in Cyprus, and the advert said something along the lines of, you know, you'd be a compere and a host for game shows. So you'll host game shows like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Bingo, and stuff like that. And it said, and if you have any of your own talents, like you're a comedian, a musician, a dancer, or anything like that, then let us know at the audition and we can incorporate that into the shows. And I can remember I went to the audition while I still had this job, just to see, do you know what I mean? Summer was coming up and it was like a fucking summer season in Cyprus, right? Bearing in mind, I was paying rent. So my mind was going on overdrive. I didn't have to pay rent. I could go and perform. I could live in the sun. I was only 18. And I was like, do you know what? Fuck it, man. I'm going for the audition. I went for the audition and I got it. And I come back and handed my notice in at work to Les and said, you know, I'm going to follow my dream. And he said, go for it, man. You're young. Fucking go for it. and told my family, and my mum said, go for it, you know, brilliant. And yeah, man, I flew out. I met this lovely guy, Steve. He was at my wedding. I still talk to him all the time, Steve. He actually helped me. I met him at the audition, and then I said to him, I didn't have enough money for the fucking plane tickets and that. And this geezer never fucking met me before. I think he chipped in and helped me. And our friendship started then when I was 18, and it's been going since, man. You know, he helped me there, and I'll tell you, I helped him back later on. But we got over to Cyprus. We learned, we spent a couple of weeks learning all the dances. Greece, I was Danny in Greece, obviously, and fucking, I was singing all the songs, dancing all the dances. We had these different shows, and we'd do the shows in the hotel. And in the day, we'd go around and get people in. Oh, mate, I was a young lad, mate, literally full of spunk. I was like, tanned, because I tan up good because my granddad's Indian. What are you doing? That's no word of a lie as well. He's Indian, so I tan up nice and oily. And mate, I was nicking birds, mate. I was in the magazine. They used to have a little one-stop magazine, and they used to write in the magazine. I'm not even lying. I'll find some cutouts. They used to write in the magazine about like my antics. I was like a bit of a legend, you know, mate. Woo. Anyway, I can't go back there because I'm a different man now. But put it this way, I was in the middle of Ayanapa. My hotel was on the strip on Ayanapa. So if I weren't mingling, if you know what I mean, mingling with the guests, I was out on Ayanapa Strip mingling with the fucking tourists, my guy. So yeah, I was there and I was living a dream, man. I was writing, but I mean, I was drinking hard. That's another thing. But I was performing. Every night I was performing. And what I was doing was, when I was performing, I was, say I was doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I was doing 5 minutes of comedy before, so I was telling jokes and seeing what worked and trying to make people laugh 5 minutes before, and then I'd do like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, if I was doing bingo or doing a quiz, I'd get on stage and I'd be like, hi guys, and it was great for me, because if the comedy wasn't working, I'd just jump into the quiz, but if the comedy was working, I'd just carry on doing the comedy, and I fucking loved it. It was like having an audience every single night to play with and to see what worked and to build stuff off. And I'd meet people round the pool doing water polo, and then I'd do jokes about them, and I fucking loved it. It was the bollocks. And yeah, and then in the evenings I'd go and get fucking smashed in Ayanapa. So there was some hardcore heavy drinking. And I remember I was writing home to all my boys, and because this was before text message and all that fucking jazz. It was email, wasn't it? And they all surprised me and flew out, about seven of them, and they stayed. I think a good handful of them stayed there for the whole fucking season. And my mum flew out actually on my birthday, and she partied with us on my birthday, which was funny. Because all the Greek Cypriot men were trying to bang her and that, and I was like not having none of it, but it was funny. But while I was out there working in Cyprus, and one night a man called Marcus Neal, gay fella, I think he wanted to get hold of me first of all, but he was watching me perform in this bar in the hotel. I was doing a quiz or a game show or something like that, and he came to me and he said, listen, we've got a cruise ship company. I'm the managing director, no, the cruise director for this cruise ship company called Travel Scope. And we're about to embark on a round the world cruise, and we're looking for a host, an MC, a compere to compare all the game shows. Got an audition over in the UK. Would you like to come and audition? And I was like, fucking hell, that's mad, traveling the world. And it was good. My summer season was coming to end in Cyprus, and it was good, but it was good and bad, because what they do in Cyprus when you work for these companies is they hold back 25% of your pay each month or each week. They hold back 25% of your pay, and they give it to you on the last day to ensure that you stay till the end of your contract, because so many people get bored, homesick, they meet people or whatever, and they fly back and it fucks up their whole entertainment. So they hold that back. And if you don't stay till the end, they keep 25% of your pay, which is at the time was quite a lot of money. And they wouldn't let me fly back for the audition, even though the start date was after my end date. They wouldn't let me fly back. So I had to sacrifice. And bearing in mind, I didn't have a home to go back to in the UK, because, you know, I didn't have anywhere to stay. So I was going back to crash on my uncle's couch in his house. I'd lose the money. I'd spunk the rest of my money boozing. So I'd be going back to start fresh or nothing, to do this audition and then hang around to see if I got it. And if not, fuck knows what's next. But I rang my mum, spoke to my mum, and my mum said, fucking go for it, man. Fuck it. You only live once and it's what you want to do, innit? You want to be on stage. You want to entertain. My mum always said that to me. Fuck it. Go for it. So I was like, do you know what? Bollocks. Fuck this. I'm out of here. Left. Lost the money. Went home. Done the audition. 50, I think it was something like 56 people. I can remember it was 50 something people auditioning for this one role on this one small cruise ship. And the cruise ship was going off on a 4-month trip around the world. Fucking, I'll show you on my map in a minute where it went, but it was fucking hundreds of locations. It was around the world cruise. So it went from one end of the globe all the way around the world. Fucking, it was like, the UK, it would come, I'll just tell you, it was the UK, it started in the UK, I believe it went over to like, up to like Norway, so it went all through the Norwegian fjords, all around Russia and all that stuff, and then down and all through like Europe, around Europe, let me see if I can get this right, and then down like almost as if it was going down to like Africa, then it would go, and then it went across to like, is it the Azores and all of that stuff? And then all the way over to America, around America, through the fucking Panama Canal. And then you have fucking Fiji, all of that stuff. Mauritius, all the way over to Australia, all around fucking Australia, all the rest. Do you know what I mean? So around the whole fucking world, it was mental. And 50 people auditioned and fucking your boy got the fucking gig, mate. That was that's up there. I think that's better than when I got my TV show. I'm not going to lie to you. Because my life was changed, mate. And I was fucking 18, and I was just like, what? Fucking 4 months on a cruise ship cruising around the world doing what I love. And that was me off, mate. Bang. I had to borrow the money again from a girl that I was seeing at the time called fuck knows Maria, I think. Shout out to Maria for that 130 quid for the train fare to I don't know, Falmouth or something like that. I can't fucking remember, mate, but I borrowed the money and I got down. I probably earned the money though. Do you know what I'm saying? But yeah, and I'd done my first world cruise and that's where I really upped my game in regards to the stand-up comedy and everything. But again, all of my wages went on boozing. It was quality, mate, on the cruise ship. They had a crew bar, all the booze was cheap. And every night I'd have a few drinks to lighten my nerves. We had a big audience. The beautiful thing about, so yeah, the drinking continued, man. The drinking was heavy from there. So yeah, it's been drinking. I mean, as the career progressed, the drinking was fucking always there. This is what it is, man. Like, it was just like, I moved out when I was young. I was getting on the smash with my fucking pals. Then my job was fucking over in Cyprus. I was getting on the smash the whole time there. Then I moved on to the cruise ship. Stopped my life's been a fucking party. I was fucking getting on the smash there. I'd done the world cruise, but it was brilliant because they had professional comedians flying on. So I'd learn from the professional comedians. And again, by this point, what I was doing was I was over in Cyprus. I was putting the bits that I'd created myself and I was adding more on as the weeks went on. And then I plucked up the courage to ask the cruise director, look, can I have my own slot, my own comedy slot, my own show? So they had a smaller entertainment lounge and they put me in there to do like a 45 minute show to the audience, like light entertainment, you know, as an alternative to the big shows. And fucking, I started smashing it, mate. I'm funny as fuck. Once I get on stage, as long as I know what I'm talking about, I can deliver that stuff. I was young. I look like a young fucking Barry Manilow, mate. I had fucking long, I'll see if I can get another picture. Vigo, see if you can find it on my Facebook. I had fucking highlighted. I used to straighten my hair at the front. So straighten it up in spikes at the front and spikes down the back. And it was all fucking bleach blonde. I look like a lesbian. I'm not going to lie to you, but you know what I'm saying? And the old ladies, fuck me, mate. They pay good money for the entertainment. Anyway, so I was doing my stand-up comedy shows on there. And that's when it kicked off for me big time. You know, I was loving life. And that's it. I decided I was going to be a comedian. And I'd done 4 years of that, 4 or 5 years of that. Took me up to the age of about 25, on and off cruise ships, different ones, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian Cruise Lines, fucking Thompson cruise ships, fucking everything. The only one I didn't do is Disney because they're pussy odds, you know. No, just because I just never done it. There wasn't a lot of free reign on Disney to sort of be a bit wild, but I'd done a lot of the other ones. And I, in the end, became what's called a cabaret comedian, the youngest one on the circuit for Royal Caribbean as well. One of my great achievements, which I look back on and think is fucking amazing. I was very young. I was 24, I think I was. And I was flying from one Royal Caribbean cruise ship to the other. I could be over in on the Caribbean. I'd join the ship. I'd sail around the Caribbean for 3 or 4 days, entertain the female entertainers, if you know what I mean. Let's not go overboard, eh? Let's not go overboard. We're all on the same. That's what he used to say. Hey, girls, we're all on the same boat here, eh? Anyway, but yeah, and then, yeah, fly on and off the cruise ship. So I was living the dream. But then by about the age of 25, I got bored again. I got really bored. I thought to myself, I'm a big fish in a small pond on the cruise ships. Everyone knew me on the cruise ships, on the circuit, and the audiences were fucking big. But I didn't want to be 40, which I nearly am. I'm 39 this week. I didn't want to be 40, and no one knew me back home. And, you know, I wanted to get on TV. I wanted to do films, and I wanted to do stand-up comedy. And fuck me, I'm doing it all. So that's made me smile, because I've just had a fucking... I'll see how positive things are now. I just want to say, like, now I visualize my life in such a positive way. I feel like when I've been drinking, when I drink, I feel like, honestly, I feel, this is the truth, man. I feel like I was always like trying to get the weeks out of the way to get to the weekend. It was always a pity party when I was drinking. It was like, poor me, man. I was hungover, anxious, depressed because of the booze. And I was always like, oh man, nothing's going right. I just want to get this week out of the way. Oh, today's long, because all my days I was hungover. And now I've just stopped and thought, fucking hell, man, the 25-year-old me on the cruise ship thinking, shall I go home? I've just made it here. It's fucking brilliant. But shall I go home and shall I start? Because there's so much more I want out of life. That 25-year-old me, if I could stand in front of him and go, mate, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be the fucking worst, man. It's going to be fucking hard. But mate, you are going to fuck everyone. Majority of people in the UK are going to know your fucking name. They are going to know your name. You are going to get a big fucking TV show by one of the biggest broadcasters. You're going to sell out tours. You're going to fucking get millions of followers. You're going to make millions of pounds, and you are going to lose the lot. All the millions, mate. Apart from the followers, you're going to lose everything. You're going to lose the millions of pounds. You're going to lose the fucking house. You're going to lose the fucking TV show. You're going to lose your sanity. You're going to lose a lot. And while you lose all that, you're going to lose your fucking dad. And you're going to get it all back, apart from your old man. You're going to get it all back. The 25-year-old me would stand there and look at me and go, let's fucking go. Let's go. But then I'll say, but by the time you're 40, you're going to have to stop drinking and taking drugs. And a 25-year-old is going to go, fuck that, I'm staying here. Oh, man. I feel like this is a story to be continued. I'm going to stop it there. I'm going to hold it there and leave you wanting more. Well, you let me know if you want me to carry this on another episode of Menace to Sobriety. But I've got to the point where I was just about to leave the cruise ship and come back and embark on being Dapper Laughs. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. That was a weird one, wasn't it? Every fucking podcast is a different, like, I don't know what's going on. It's like you've got an insight into my ADHD. You've got an insight into my mind. It's like it's wild. This fucking podcast will never have a format. It will never be organized. It will always be all over the fucking place. So I can always ensure you that you will be entertained. For those of you that come on for the guests, thank you for sticking with me while I'm shooting this feature film. But that is to be continued, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like more storytelling time, or you got any ideas what you'd like me to do for next week's podcast, soon we're going to be back to the format as before. We'll have guests on. I'm getting my co-host involved properly, which is Kirk Norcross. But 39 on Friday. It's Father's Day Sunday. Please, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to hear more of that stuff, get tickets to my stand-up comedy tour. Link. Tickets are there. I've got 28 dates kicking off in January, and they're selling out fast. So make sure you get to my tour. That was nice. I feel like we had a good chat. I feel like we're getting to know each other. That was storytelling time, baby. To be continued. Let me know what you liked, what caught you, what you want more of. Any questions, la-di-da, chuck it in the comments. Sharon's caring. DM me on Instagram. Let me know if you liked the episode. Bye.